Josh, do you have any more Flash viewings lined up other than tomorrow? Or what is it? Friday.
Friday, yeah. No, not yet. Andy, I don't know if you're like on the fence necessarily or what your impression of thinking about the Flash movie was. I would recommend it. I was able to get into an early screening last week. It's pretty good.
Okay. I was probably going to see it just because Michael Keaton's in it.
Sure.
I think Josh has been one of those ones that's very, very, I don't know if adamant's the right word, but maybe unsure about Ezra Miller and all the crap that's been going on with him, whether or not this was going to be a good thing for all of this. And so if we're getting the stamp of approval from Josh, it's got to be that good.
Well, the dude's a complete turdberg.
Well, yeah, that's true. Correct. Yes.
I think if one can try as hard as they can, not that they necessarily need to, but if you can try as hard as you can to just watch this as the Flash movie and just compartmentalize everything else, both about him, the DCU, all of it, and just watch this, I think it's pretty good. So
I mean, I didn't mind the Black Adam movie, so I'm assuming you're really fine. Like this one.
If that's your bar, then yeah. I mean, come on. Hello and welcome to another episode of Bry Guy and Super Friends. I'm your host, Brian Labick. Joining me for this episode are two people continuing, again, their movie mission. Andy Stoles.
What's up, podcast people?
And Ian Leidick.
Oh, give me a taste, boy, and free my little soul. I want to taste your goods.
You made your own little jingle for the one question you want answered this entire show.
I'm real upset because I had like been working on that all day and I fucked it up when we're finally doing it. I might just get up and leave.
Just say your answer to that question, leave, and then you're done. We'll cash you out.
Yes.
All right, so we're back to continue our Never Seen That series for Mission Impossible. So we're up to Mission Impossible Fallout from 2018. So this is the last Mission Impossible movies that are currently released. We're working our way up to Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, which releases on a Wednesday, July 12th. It's just odd to me that it shows up on a Wednesday. But
Wednesday?
Yep.
Well, is it 11:59?
I don't... What do you mean?
Like, 11:59 p.m. Wednesday, you know, midnight Thursday.
I said July 12th, so that would be probably midnight Tuesday into Wednesday.
Now I got to bring up a calendar. Why are you making numbers a part of the show again?
I looked at the calendar before I had the date. 12th.
No, but I'm saying, yeah, it's Wednesday, but it really comes out Thursday.
No, I think it's a Wednesday. Sometimes movies will do Wednesdays. Sometimes it's for like a holiday weekend, though. There's no holiday weekend. The July 4th holiday is before that, so I don't know why they're doing it afterwards. But anyway, it looks like it's on a Wednesday. So you might be able to, if you want to go out earlier in the week, in the middle of the week to see Dead Reckoning Part 1, which I probably won't get a chance to do, that'll be out there. All right, so if you've never listened to one of the Never Seen That episodes, so we'll tell you sort of summary about what that's all about. So it's pretty, hopefully, self-explanatory, but these have always been envisioned as episodes as a way to introduce someone to a movie or series that maybe you're surprised they haven't seen yet, or we kind of feel like that they should see. So starting us off, we usually try to record a little bit before watching the movie, see what people know going in. We'll take a break to watch the movie, and then we'll come back afterwards and give our thoughts after watching the film. And just as another refresher for this franchise, all of these movies have been brand spanking new to Ian. Andy has seen some of the earlier ones. The last one we got to was finally one where he hasn't seen. This one is another brand new one for Andy, so I'm excited to see what these guys think about this one. Before we get into sort of where we're, what, you know, our normal questions that we sort of do for the beginning here, as of right now, and this is, I know, the question I ask at the beginning of all these episodes, out of the five movies that we have watched so far in this franchise, which one is your favorite? Where does the bar currently stand? Andy, where are you at with this one?
The last one.
Rogue Nation.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Yeah, you said I think they get progressively better, right, as we were going through.
There was one hiccup, but yeah.
Ian, where are you at? Where's your favorite right now? Is it still the Doves?
I don't get. You have the scores. I know this. Like I know you can just tell everyone what everyone rated the highest. So my answer is John Woo's Mission Impossible 2, the greatest film Tom Cruise was probably in.
Youch.
Now, I did forget to bring up the ratings as we're doing this because I don't have to write them in now. But now you're going to make me look. And no, 2 is not your highest rated.
Yeah, I know it's not. But you didn't still, look it up ahead of time.
So, but it's still your favorite? Like, you still would put that one over the other ones? Or we're just going...
Honestly, yeah, because it doesn't have plot questions. It just happens.
So for the record, Ian did rate Mission Impossible Rogue Nation the highest out of the ones he's seen so far. So just for the record, that is out there.
Your favorite is still 3?
Out of the ones we've seen, 3 and 5 are very, very close. And I could switch them either one out on any given day. Right now, I think maybe because Rogue Nation's a little bit more recent. That's the one that's right now for me. Like I think I like that one more, but 3 definitely is very, very close second.
So they're interchangeable.
Like a 1A and 1B type of thing.
Gotcha. Whichever one you most recently have seen.
Kinda, yeah. Whichever one's fresh. All right, so going into Mission Impossible Fallout, which is the most recent one. So this might have been one that you have peripherally seen, like trailers or commercials or something with this movie. But Ian, do you know anything about this one going into it before we see it?
That guy's in it because I saw him probably in a trailer, but other than
which
that,
guy? There's a lot of guys.
Benji.
He is in it. Yes.
Simon Pegg.
Yeah. I saw him in a trailer, I think for a Mission Impossible film. It might've been this one. Might've been 5. It might've been 4. Who knows? But I saw it. I think in the trailer, Tom Cruise was running somewhere. So
that's a fair bet too. Yep.
Yeah. So that's what I know. Simon Pegg's in it, and I think Tom Cruise ran somewhere.
Andy, anything you know about this going in?
You know what? I probably have seen the trailers and the movie posters and whatnot, but nothing really is cracking my recollection here.
Okay. I mean, we are still what, 5 years out from when this movie was released now. So
yeah. You said 2018, right?
2018, yeah.
Yeah, that's 5 years.
I can math. Woohoo.
I said to cut it out with the math on the show.
I'm just happy I could do that without a calculator right now. So
out.
No. He did the full house, everybody.
What? There's a little pin that just says that. It's that guy. I don't know his name, but it's just his face on this little pin, and it says, cut it out.
It's Dave Coulier, right? Didn't Dave Coulier do that?
You were able to get it for a penny on Amazon for a good while. I think they sold out finally, but you get that pin for a penny at one point.
Oh, shit. We missed our chance. Predictions for Mission Impossible Fallout. Andy, you have anything you want to predict or lay on the line you think might happen in this movie?
I have a feeling that his wife is going to not be resurrected, but be reintroduced into the franchise.
Okay.
This
has been sort of your guys' burning question, and I keep trying to like play it off that you will somehow get answers and resolutions to some of the stuff as we go through.
Yes, that's why I'm like waiting with intense anticipation for this.
Ian, anything you want to predict or anything for this one?
More really building off Andy's questions that you won't talk to us about. Like 90% sure the weird German guy that like wants to do human centipede with people, that guy, the villain for the last movie. You know, the kind of guy that looks like that guy eats people. You know, the main villain.
You're just talking about the main guy from the main villain from the last movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
The guy that looks like he eats faces. Yeah, that guy.
I don't remember that conversation at all, but go ahead. Continue.
This was in a review. I described him as someone that eats people.
I've already blacked it out, but go ahead.
You describe a German face eater is what you just said.
Yeah. We all know what I'm talking about. Like, no one's confused.
Anyways, a little bit, but you know, whatever. Go ahead.
That guy actually midway through the last movie already kidnapped Tom Cruise's wife.
That's going to be the twist of this one. She's already captured.
Yeah, she's already been captured. But for whatever reason, he didn't use it during the last movie. I don't know why. I'm not a supervillain.
What a twist.
Well, that's true. I mean, they did leave him alive, right, in the last movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. He comes back because rogue protocol.
He's going to go. He's gonna go interrogate him, and he's like, you know what? I got your wife. And he's going to be like, tell me the truth.
This is verbatim, like, right?
You can't handle the truth.
I was waiting for it.
Is that you say in response that you feel unlucky, punk?
We do, for this one, get the same director as Rogue Nation. So Chris McCrory comes back to direct Mission Impossible Fallout. Same one as Rogue Nation. So typically I try to ask if you think you're going to get any sort of drastic changes between the director changes we get. But with it being the same director, do you expect any changes between the two movies? Or you think it'll follow pretty much the same type of, I don't know, formula or aesthetic or something? Yeah, Andy, I'll start with you.
I feel like there's going to be a little bit more cohesion between these two movies because it's the same director.
Okay.
I feel like a few of the first Mission Impossible movies were sort of like some of those James Bond movies in the past where it's like each one was just sort of like a one shot of his adventures.
And there
was
right.
No like interconnectivity, but we've been building interconnectivity as we've been going in these movies. And I think the same director directing back to back movies, and I'm pretty sure he's directing the other two.
He is doing the next two as well. Yep.
Then we're going to get this really awesome, like Daniel Craig sort of interconnectivity thing. So
yeah, I think the franchise always kind of started out, and I think that was the reason for the director changes, is they were meant to sort of be like episodes of a television show, but at the movies. So it didn't really matter. You could jump into any one and be fine. But as the way the, I don't know, movie-going audiences' tastes kind of evolve, or maybe, you know, cinematic universes and stuff had something to do with that, where all these movies are kind of connected now a lot for just the movie-going audiences, they might have just shifted towards that. I'm not really sure, I guess, what the reasoning was. But yeah, you're right. They do kind of, the storylines will kind of carry over and stuff like that. And they do more callbacks to previous movies than they have before. They're less of like one-off episodes and more of a continuing story, which I enjoy. I really like that part of it.
Isn't that how like the Fast movies were?
Kinda. I mean, yeah, I guess the first couple Fast movies didn't really connect to each other. It was just like, hey, there's another movie with street racing and stuff, and maybe some of the same characters are in it, but the storylines didn't really matter until you get to about 4. And then from then on, it's like, okay, now we have this family saga of like heisting and stuff, and we'll go from there. Anything for you? Any drastic changes or anything you expect to see?
I mean, I do think it's going to be super weird where in this movie, they really, during all the fight scenes, whenever anyone does a punch, they have to do the, like Bruce Lee. I think that's going to be a really weird change to this one. But they added that, all of that, like, Hong Kong kung fu-iness to it.
I can't wait for that as well. I'm excited. I don't really know why I asked this question, but I think I probably did it for the other one, so I'm going to keep it in here. Ian, do you think you'll like this movie?
You know what? I'm going to say no. The ranks keep going up. I'm going to say it. I think I like it. There's a Simon Pegg's in it. Tom Cruise is in it. There's a German guy that eats faces.
Andy, what do you think? Prediction off the bat. You think you're going to like this one the best after your trend?
Yes, I do believe I will like it slightly more than the last.
Okay. We'll see if that prediction holds. On to our other predictions that we try to do every movie before we see it. We try to give some answers, yes or no, some tallies for some things, and see how close we get after watching the movie, assuming our tallies as we watch the movie are correct, which I think there's probably a plus or minus variable somewhere in there. But we do as best we can as we're watching these movies, which is going to be real fun. If, you know, if we try to go see Dead Reckoning and I can't take a tablet and paper with me to try to count how many times Tom Cruise runs and try to remember as we're going, that's going to be real fun.
Why can't you do that?
I mean, I probably could. I just don't want to. Like,
Oh,
Brian, see, this is where you get an empty cup and you put a kernel of popcorn in each time he runs.
That's actually the best idea you might have had for this scenario.
Until someone reaches over and starts pulling popcorn out.
Yeah, don't you touch my cup!
Well, I mean, that's why you got to make sure no one's sitting next to you.
It's not for sharing.
That's my running, that's my running cup.
My running cup.
You stand up before the show, you got a piece of duct tape on it, and it says running cup. You explain to everyone, including in other rows, why it's a running cup, and did not get popcorn out of this cup.
Skew my vote if they start eating all my popcorn. Motherfuckers. All right. Off the top, how many mask reveals do you think will happen in Mission Impossible Fallout? Andy?
I feel like we got really low in the last one, so I'm going to go a wee bit higher than the last, which was sort of a fake one, but I'm
going to
go
three. Okay. Ian, how many mask reveals do you think we'll get in this one?
Two.
Okay.
One's going to be Tom Cruise revealing he's actually the face-eating German. The other one's going to be the face-eating German revealing he's actually Tom Cruise's wife.
Oh. I was waiting for they were going to reverse each other, but no.
Yeah, but no.
Threw a wrench in there. Because I don't think we've seen that yet. We haven't seen people put masks on for the opposite sex. So that would be a first for these movies.
Wait, what? That means that the nipple clamps are on Tom Cruise. Oh, shit.
This just took a turn.
What a twist.
I'm just saying, why can't Tom Cruise be the dead at the beginning of the movie?
I mean, he's got the acting chops for it, right? He can pretty much do whatever he wants in these movies. So I don't see anything wrong with that. Josh, I got his predictions beforehand because he's going to join us after we watch the movie. He has said one mask gag. I feel like four is too many, so I'm going to have to go with the same as somebody. I'm going to go with Ian and say two.
Oh, I'm the high. I'm
yeah,
the high.
I feel like three might be too many, but
oh.
it's got to be one of those. But I'm gonna take the low road. We'll see.
Well, you're the only one that's seen this show.
Yes, but I can't. Josh, I think has seen it too. I just think this is a rewatch for Josh as well. But off the top of my head, I don't know it enough verbatim to be like, oh yeah, there's one there, there's one there, there's one there. So I'm still trying to like, I might be able to think of like one or two, one, I don't know. I'm not going to think too hard at it cause I don't want to try to actually get it right beforehand. All right. Next question. Does Ethan go rogue? Ian? Yes or no?
Come on. He started the last movie rogue. Like, come on.
It was in the title. Like,
he started off rogue, got unrogued, and then re-rogued. And then unrogued again.
So you're going to go yes for rogue?
He's probably rogue right now.
Andy, yes or no for rogue?
Yes. Yes, he will be going.
Okay. Josh said no.
That's a dumb answer.
I'm going to go yes as well. I feel like the track record for Rogue is very high. So
it's yes. The answer is yes.
Because I feel like we can even like talk ourselves into him going Rogue at any given point, even if he's...
Yeah.
We've never had to, but yeah, we could.
On mission or whatever, because sometimes on mission means going Rogue. You know?
Right. Depends, I guess, how strictly you want to look at is he doing his... Because I guess the question isn't, is he fulfilling the mission? The question is he going rogue? So however well he does the mission, if he goes rogue to get there, I guess that counts. I'd say that counts.
Yeah.
Unless it's designed for him to go rogue, then he's not really going rogue. Then it's a rogue natoire.
So if the mission in the briefing says you need to go rogue to complete your mission, that's not going rogue. That's him following the mission to a T.
But yeah. then if he doesn't go rogue at that point, he's still going rogue.
Yes, he's going rogue by not going rogue. Now he's still
broke my brain.
The mission.
My brain just broke. I can't handle it. Too much rogue talk.
It's a parallel. It's like in the last movie when we thought Hawkeye was betraying the group by calling in, like reporting it to.
He called him Hawkeye.
Yeah, his name.
He knows who we're talking about. Yeah.
When Hawkeye called in the guy from Glengarry Gary Ross to say, hey, here's where Tom Cruise is, and here's what we're doing,
talk
and
about
we're
going to steal
the Prime Minister. Well, I didn't want to call him the guy that killed that guy on set.
Oh, jeez, okay.
So, when Hawkeye called him, everyone's like, oh, he betrayed the group, but he didn't really betray the group because that was the plan. It's like that.
Yeah.
Like, that's okay. Not a betrayal. If we were counting betrayals because it's part of the plan.
Alright, I'm still like, so like I follow, but at the same time, if I think too hard about it, I am going to break my brain.
Well, it doesn't help probably that I keep calling him Hawkeye.
Next question. Does Tom Cruise ride a motorcycle? Yes or no?
Yeah. I loved it. The last one I were watching it. I saw motorcycles and I was like, oh, he is stealing one of them.
You just know. It's got to happen.
And then he didn't. He got in the fucking car. But then he stole one of the motorcycles.
Yep, they faked you out.
After he wrecked the car. Yeah.
Andy, did I hear a yes from you for the motorcycle as well?
I went no last time and got screwed for it, so I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
I think he's now in the like part of his career where he's like, I own 5 motorcycles.
Pretty much. I'm just going to bring them on set and ride them around.
Like, he probably owned all those motorcycles in the last one.
I would be shocked if he owned just 5. Just shocked.
Josh's answer said yes. I am also going to say yes. I actually don't know if I'm right. I can't remember, but I feel like the betting man in me has to go yes. I think there's a better chance of a motorcycle. Next question. Is there a mission-related helicopter?
I feel like this one's been real disappointing the last, like, 4 movies. I feel like there hasn't been one since they used it to, like, get into that train and, like, was that the fucking second movie?
I know there was the first one there was a helicopter trying to extract the bad guy.
Yeah.
So I don't think that was related to, I guess I wouldn't call that being related to Ethan's mission, which I think we even probably watched that movie before we had that question. So I don't even know if we actually answered it for that movie. Mission Impossible 3 definitely had a mission related helicopter. 2, I think they do use a helicopter near the end of the movie, so I'd call that mission related. 4, I'm trying to remember if they used the helicopter in 4 and 5. I don't remember. Those might have been the last 2, maybe, that they didn't do. Or maybe it was there, it just wasn't mission related.
Well, I mean, yeah, but that we're not asking if there's been helicopters in the film.
Right.
But yeah, the last 2 at least didn't, even though some people tried to say getting the big bopper Ving Rhames somewhere in a helicopter counts. It does not. Anyways.
That was me, I argued.
I honestly couldn't remember who did. Yes. I know I'm wrong. Yes.
All right. Yes for me. And Andy, mission-related helicopter.
No.
No? Okay.
No.
I'm going to read Josh's text to me verbatim. He asked, helicopter, and then he said, hella yes. So he's going yes for the helicopter.
Oh, my God.
I am also going to go yes for this one. I think we're due.
Deviation. Me.
All right. One of the big ones. How many times will Tom Cruise run in this movie? So again, just for anybody that might be tuning in for the first time, we're judging this based on starts and stops. So if he starts running from one scene into the next, and you know they cut to a different perspective and he's still flat out running, that is one run. As soon as he stops and then starts to run again, that's the second run. So that is the way we're trying to tally this.
A voluntary stop or an involuntary stop?
Any stop.
Yeah. If he gets exploded and has to fall down and get back up and start running again, that's 2 runs.
That's 2 runs, yep. So what's the tally for you guys? What do you think? Andy, for how many times Tom Cruise will run?
I cannot for the life of me remember how much it was last time.
I don't know if I have my notes readily available from last time.
I feel like it was lower than almost all of us guessed.
Yeah. I think it was too. Yeah, okay, like, so Mission Impossible 5, I found my notes. So we guessed 37 from Ian, 21 from Andy, 14 from Josh, 30 from me, and I think I counted 14, give or take. So Josh was lowballing it, and he came in pretty close as far as I could tell.
Because 3 or 4 had, like, a lot of runs, which I think has really fucked up my parameter for measuring this.
Yeah.
I don't know. I found our predictions for 4, but I don't know if I have written down what the run count I had is.
No worries. I'm going to say 17.
17 from Andy. Okay. Ian, what do you 12. Think? 12? All right. I'm gonna highball it. I'm going to go 25. 97. No, 25. I'm going to go 25.
It's going to really piss me off when he spends the whole movie in a wheelchair.
He's literally attached to his motorcycle.
And I refuse to count that every time the motorcycle starts and stops, that's a run. It's not going to work.
What if his legs are moving, man?
He's really pushing that motorcycle.
What if it's a Flintstones motorcycle?
Double points. We'll count that as double points.
Did they ever have a motorcycle in the Flintstones?
I don't think so.
I'm just trying to, like, imagine. I gotta go watch all the Flintstones, I guess.
Research. Let's go.
I just really need to know that now.
All right. So the last question that I wish we could ignore, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Does he taste the goods? Andy, yes or no?
Oh, yeah. He does.
Ian?
Oh, he is tasting all of the fucking goods. Like his wife's German face eaters. There's goods and they're ready to be flawed. I mean, tasted. Does it count if it's a if it's like a bicycle?
I feel like that's what I can picture is Flintstone bicycles, but I didn't know if
that happened for sure. There's other ones that look like motorcycles, but I can't tell if they were in an episode. They don't look like it, but this bicycle, definitely. They'd have a four-person bicycle.
Jeez. Okay.
Count.
I guess you need that many legs to push the bicycle.
I mean, when the wheels are stones.
That's right. Josh's prediction for tasting the goods is no. I'll side with Josh on this, just partially in protest of this question. I'm going to say no. All right, that is it for our predictions. Anything else last minute you guys want to throw out there before we get to the movie and sit down to watch?
I'm really hoping to remember to bring a notebook and pencil for when I watch the movie so that I can keep tabs.
Well, worst comes to worst, I can pass one off to you. If you absolutely need something, because I know you don't like notes, so but if you're keen on taking some, I will support you.
I mean, it's not notes; it's just tick marks.
You could put that on your phone, right? Just use the notepad on your phone. Worst comes to worst.
Can you do tick marks on your phone?
I don't know about tick marks, but you could just put number one over and over again.
Look like I'm just doing binary.
Or big L's, or little lowercase L's.
There's this calculator you can just
put one. That'll work too. Ian, anything last minute you want to throw out before we get to the movie? No? Okay. All right. Well, that is it for the pre-movie stuff. We're going to get into Mission Impossible Fallout. So feel free to take a break with us, pause us, come back after watching the movie with us. We're not really with us, I guess, really on your own time. But, you know, once you're done, we'll be here.
Aren't you streaming it?
No. We're not streaming.
You're streaming a live watch along.
No, we are not set up for that. But yeah, if you would rather just listen on either way, whether you've done your homework or not, well, that's fine. If you'd rather, you know, we'll get into the spoilers after this. So if you want some stuff spoiled, don't care, then feel free to listen. Otherwise, pause this, come back after watching the movie, and we will see you all on the other side. All right, so we are back after having finished the last Mission Impossible we can watch from home, Mission Impossible Fallout. And we've added another member to the crew. So we've added Josh Zorge to our movie mission.
I just flew in by helicopter over the mountains to arrive at the camp.
Nicely done. All right, so it should be fairly obvious, but I'm going to throw out the spoiler warning anyway. So if you have not seen Mission Impossible Fallout from 2018, pause us now, come back after doing your homework. Or, you know, if you'd like to have things ruined for you, then by all means, listen on. Either way, spoilers to follow.
Wee-oo, wee-oo.
Spoiler!
Wee-oo, wee-oo.
Spoiler!
You know, something like that.
All right, so we are back from the spoiler warning. Ian, I'm going to start with you, because we've made it through all six of the current Mission Impossible movies. You've survived watching all six. I feel like it was probably pulling teeth a little bit here, but what did you think of this movie? Did it live up to or fall short of any of your expectations?
That's tough, because I'm trying to think. Did I have any expectations?
That's kind of why I asked this, yes. Where was the bar for you for this movie?
Like, I think people might be getting tired of it, because I think we've been saying this for three movies now. They found a formula, and they are sticking to it. And there's so much sticking to it that the mask isn't even really a big deal anymore. It's kind of a little side, like, oh, it's a little gimmicky thing we do now here. Kind of fun, and And it doesn't really make sense. It's like, why is that guy even masked right now? Won't get into it right now. But it was a fine, somber action film.
Okay. Andy, what did you think of this one? Since this is the only second one you haven't seen out of the six.
Right, just the second one that I haven't seen out of the six, yes. I thoroughly enjoyed this one. I thought it was a very well done movie. I thought all the actors played their roles to the maximum, I guess.
Okay.
But you're gonna say the completion. Yeah, I mean, they did finish filming it. They got it.
Yep, they made it through. Movie's done. I know for Andy, for you, that these movies have been steadily climbing. So given the last one, I think was your favorite. Is this one still the step up, or you kind of come down off this one?
I mean, the last one was very good, and this one was very enjoyable as well. I would probably say it was a slight increase over the last.
Okay. Josh, this is a rewatch for you, correct?
Yeah. This was because I repeated ad nauseum at various times the last couple years. This was the first one I ever saw in theaters.
Okay. I thought I remember when we talked about, and I should have brought up the list, but I think when we did our top 10 of that year, didn't make your list, didn't it?
That was number two.
Okay.
I
didn't remember it being that high, but I thought I was surprised that it even just made your list. Period.
Yeah. It was a good time.
Have you watched this one prior to us watching it again? When was the last time you watched it? Was it in the theaters, or did you watch it at home at some point?
Yeah, we've probably watched it once or twice. I know definitely once at home. So this is like number three or four viewing.
Okay. So what'd you feel after this, you know, third or fourth viewing of the movie? Still up there for you? Still, it still agrees to a number two out of your top 10 for whatever year that was, 2018?
I mean, out of the films for that year, yeah. I mean, to be fair, the movie came out in the summer, and by the time we were putting that list together in, you know, the early January of the following year, you know, I had 6 months to marinate on it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think any, like, rewatches have recalibrated or settled things in a different way. It's still pretty solid.
Yeah, I'm going back to actually just pulled up your list. The only movie to beat Mission Impossible Fallout on your list, do you remember which one it was?
Infinity War.
Yeah, Infinity War. Avengers movie made it the top of your list, yeah, which I think made everybody's list.
Not mine.
Oh, no, Mike was the outlier for that one. Yep.
Mike was what?
Mike was the outlier for that one. He did not have Infinity War as his top movie of that year.
What was it?
Ready Player One.
Oh, my God. No wonder I'm not on those fucking shows. Jesus, I'm dying just from hearing about it.
Okay, I could very easily just start going through a nostalgia trip, going through our top 10 list, so I'm not going to do that right now. All right, so this movie is also one of my favorites. I love this one, and I still have been I've actually been struggling with myself trying to figure out what I want to rate this by the time I get to the end of it, because I'm trying to figure out if I want to rate it higher or lower than Rogue Nation and where I kind of fell with Mission Impossible 3 and all that stuff, because I think they're the same. Yeah, I did rate them the same, so I'm trying to figure out if this is better than those two. I feel like it's going to be a spur of the moment rating for me probably by the end, but we'll see. We did get with Rogue Nation, we got a different director. Christopher McQuarrie came in to direct, and he comes back for this one. This is the only Mission Impossible movie to repeat a director, and I hope you like him because he signed on for the next two movies, so he's doing 7 and 8 as well. So, Ian, what did you think of McQuarrie's direction? Excited that he came back, or still kind of feel the same as Rogue Nation? I don't know.
I didn't care that he came back. I don't think it makes a difference. Okay. There's all this talk. You showed us the special features where it's like, you know, the whole big thing about the Mission Impossible series is they're a different director every time. And when I agreed with Tom to come back and do this one, this is, I'm quoting Christopher McQuarrie now. You can tell by my accent. I said, we got to do something different so it doesn't feel like the same director. It got to be something new so it's not the same guy filming this twice. And it didn't happen. I don't know. He's like using all these. He used like three examples to show why it's different. And I'm like, what? Are you fucking dumb? You did a chase scene. Good job, man. You didn't do anything like different in your chase scene. Tom fell and started running at the end of his chase. You know, that was a big surprise. Nothing wrong with his directing. He just didn't do anything where you're like, oh man, he imbibed a whole different view. You know what I'm saying, Cucamonga? Like, what? No, nothing happened.
Sometime later, we'll have to talk about what Cucamonga is.
It's the second half of the town, Rancho Cucamonga.
You made that up.
That's a real place in California.
I do believe that's the correct thing.
Son of a bitch. I can never tell with him.
Somebody wiki that.
I hate when he says correct things and I'm trying to call him on his bullshit. I can't. Because now I'm going to second guess the next time he says some bullshit.
Yeah.
And this is his whole entire plan and I fucking hate it.
That's the ploy. It's the long con, sir.
I hate it. Yeah, I think, you know, what Ian was saying, McCrory did. I've heard this in other conversations he's had where he agreed to come back, but he basically completely revamped the crew. So he picked a different, like, director photographer, different assistant director, different cinematographer, different composer. I think he's still listed as the writer. I think he wrote both movies, so that's still the same. But so I think they tried to go for a different look and feel. I'm kind of with Ian. I don't know if I can really tell the difference. I think if you probably really wanted to put them side by side and dig into them, you could probably start picking stuff apart that way. But from a general, like, action movie summer blockbuster standpoint, I don't know if you can really tell the difference between the two. Like, if there was meant to be a difference between the two, I think they are pretty similar. The pacing still kind of hits the same. The action is all over the top and really well directed. I don't think there's anything kind of different there.
And even story-wise, they're similar. They brought back the same villain, and then the other alternate villain is also, like, intelligence operative, you know, working for a Western country. Like, they didn't, like, even that's the same beat. You know, there's not a lot different other than they made people grow facial hair.
Yeah. I don't know. Josh, what do you think about McCrory coming back?
I agree with both of you. And actually quite, and I'm glad that you brought up the director's own comments, because I don't quite necessarily, I'm sure if you're in the weeds and this is the craft that you do, you know, from that, through that lens, you yourself and maybe others that you work with see those granular differences. I think it is, if you asked somebody, if you showed someone these six movies and said two of them are made by the same director, watch all six and tell me which ones you think those were, I think it's easy to point to these two. And that's fine.
Yeah.
As Ian said, like, it's not that he did anything bad. But to your point, though, I think that almost makes sense, because this is one of the, this is really the first time they ever had direct continuing storylines. There's pieces that carry from one to the next in some regards, but they literally, like, picked up the story almost like where they left off. Yeah, there's a time gap, but you're continuing something that has not been fully resolved from the previous movie. And that really hasn't happened before. They're otherwise fairly self-contained major plots. The fact that Solomon Lane continues in this, I think it should feel very cohesive. If it felt, you know, I think this is always a good example to go to. Like going from Christopher Columbus doing the first two Harry Potter movies to Alfonso doing Prisoner of Azkaban, even people who don't like Harry Potter or couldn't care for it or they're indifferent, if they've seen those, almost everybody points to Prisoner of Azkaban as a specific standout in the way that those movies were made, because it's so different.
Yeah.
In the way that it's shot, the way that it looks, the way it was designed. So in that regard, I think if you had Rogue Nation go into Fallout with that kind of contrast, with the story tissue that continues, I feel that would be even weirder. So I think the idea that to us it looks and feels so similar isn't necessarily a bad thing. Now if Solomon Lane and you know, things from the Syndicate continue in Dead Reckoning and whatnot, because you said McQuarrie's going to do both these next two. If those continue, you know, we'll see. But if they're completely, if what we're being presented with story wise is, you know, a big tangent, but it otherwise feels like the like carbon copies of these two, of Rogue Nation and Fallout, then I think there's, you know, then there's a space to say they're just, you know, they're just making the same movie over and over. Why is that? Then like I'm hoping Dead Reckoning does feel differently.
Yeah.
Than these two. I hope they go in different places, because I hope to some degree that, yeah, that necessarily like these story beats, I hope we're kind of done with the Solomon Lane of it all.
Well, he's still alive at the end of this, so we'll see.
He is.
Still one of the main Mission Impossible villains that I don't think has died. I think everybody else has, right?
Probably.
If I'm trying to think back. Because villain in one dies, villain in two dies, villain in three dies, villain in four falls down a parking garage and I think is dead, basically, but or at least very much paralyzed by the end of it.
Well, somehow Palpatine returns, so.
That's right. Any one of these guys is fair game. They could come back at any minute.
They fell down something. Like, that's... I've seen it.
Oh, fuck that movie.
Speaking of Andy switching Woodhart. Directors, like, in a sequel, I think you could notice the contrast between episode 7 and 8.
Oh, no, we're not getting... Andy, what did you think of McQuarrie coming back?
I thought he did another good job, and... It wasn't a large difference, but I felt like the vibe of the movie was different. I don't know if that's what he was trying to accomplish.
I'm sure that's part of it, yeah.
I felt like he did try to stylistically do it differently than the last one.
Okay. Anything specific stood out to you?
Just the way the conversations took place, I felt like was different. And I feel like this movie had a lot more... Like, you thought they were going to start unveiling some plot, and then, like, something would, like, almost, like, interrupt or quickly shift from what you thought was going to happen from the last one.
Okay.
I don't know. It the vibe, to me, seemed slightly different than the last.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to go through some of our repeatables before we get to the actual, like, yes or no and the counts we were doing. There's some other repeatables to get through. Cold open. Josh, what do you think about this cold open for the movie, which I think is actually pretty long? Like, we go through Ethan's dream sequence at the beginning, then it goes into him receiving the mission, then we get to them trying to do the drop and trade for the plutonium that goes awry. We end up in the fake hospital to try to get information out of that guy, and it's not until after that the walls come down and they trank him again that we get the fuse. So that's a very long cold open, I think, compared to other ones we've had.
I mean, to this degree, I would almost say, like, does that even count as a cold open anymore? Like, like, really, like, it's like a solid, 15 minutes.
I mean, I'm counting until we get to the title sequence, which is, that's how long it takes.
Sure. I think, I don't know. I think it makes it seem like apples and oranges to me. I don't think I can judge it or comment on it in the same way. I liked all
just because
of that.
They put so much in there.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of plot.
Yeah.
That occurs. There's a lot of story that they set up and that they actually do, instead of just like, oh, here's a fun opening scene that may or may not have, you know, directly important vital information in it for the rest of the movie. But we'll, you know, then we'll move on in 5 minutes, 5 to 7 minutes. This was chunky. I do love the hospital fake out thing. I forgot how it did it. Like, this time around, I remembered it was fake. But I couldn't remember what exactly they did with it. But the first time I saw it, I thought, oh my god, they had the balls to go with something like Sum of All Fears, or, you know, a movie where they failed and, like, legitimately, shit, nuclear weapons got deployed and whatnot. Like, that would have been bold. And then when you get the whole fake out, I was like, oh shit, that was awesome.
Andy, what did you think? Did the cold open swerve you? Were you expecting, sort of like Josh, like, oh shit, the nukes went off, what do we do from here?
I immediately thought, like, well, the name of this movie is Fallout. Like, holy fuck, they launched 3 fucking nukes. Like that's why it's called Fallout. That's crazy. And then, like, the walls fell down and, you know, Simon Pegg unveiled his mask. And I'm like, well, that's one for the mask. And,
I mean, did you like that, or were you like, oh, I'm kind of disappointed they didn't lean into that?
I actually really did like it, because I felt like Tom Cruise acting like Ethan Hunt, who was acting, was actually pretty good.
So many layers to that.
yeah, because he's Tom Cruise acting like Ethan Hunt, but Ethan Hunt was also acting, yeah. So I enjoyed that.
Ian, what'd you think of the cold open?
I mean, I agree with Josh. It's not a cold open if it's like 8 scenes and like 20% of your plot. You know, like a cold open is a guy breaking out of a prison. You know, that's a cold open. That's one scene. This is like, there's so much going on. And they're like, oh yeah, they got to do the opening credit sequence because they're legally obligated because of the unions. You know, this doesn't feel the same. I'm still real upset that it wasn't just Wolf Blitzer. Like, I thought that would have been funny to find out Wolf Blitzer's, like, deep undercover.
It doesn't do anything for you that they actually got Wolf Blitzer to be in the movie, at least, to play himself?
No, that happens all the time with, like, all right. ESPN and CNN. Like, Anderson Cooper's probably in 40 movies, you know? Like, just playing the news guy.
Bill O'Reilly, if you remember, I want to say was in Iron Man. Yeah. He's not in it, but, like, he, same thing, like, does a broadcast thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like 3 years before he wouldn't have been able to do it. But I guess, like I said, I really thought Wolf Blitzer would have been better real. I guess I didn't think like these nukes went off because, you know, that's not how these movies go. The bad thing never actually happens. And if it did, if it's something bad does happen, like, I don't know, someone gets infected with some type of virus that they're going to be patient zero for. They get cured or something before it's over, you know. Everything's reversible. And unfortunately, as we know currently, nuclear explosions aren't reversible. So I knew, you know, that wasn't real.
That's the working theory, let's speak.
I mean, we've only got one example of Chernobyl of, you know, we can't reverse this. So, you know, maybe if someone else tried, maybe we could. But as of right now, we just can't.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was more in line with Josh. I think at least the first time viewing, I really thought like, oh shit, they might actually lean into this, and where are they going to go from here? And then I think the same beat as Andy is like when the walls came down, I was like, oh no, okay, yeah, it's just Mission Impossible now. But I still loved it. But I really thought for a second they might like have the balls to go that direction. But
he would have been in prison. He directly lost the plutonium that blew up. Arguably the 3 holiest sites in the world. Like, he would be in prison. He'd be in Gitmo.
I mean, he's like, not in jail for somewhat being involved with blowing up the Kremlin, right? Like, that's still a thing that happened.
Remember, they're bad guys.
I'm just saying.
Those are bad people. The Pope's a good person.
We know, too, that, like, Dead Reckoning coming up is part one, so I have to wonder if part one ends on some sort of cliffhanger where sort of like you're saying, Ian, that something actually goes wrong, and then we got to see what they do in part 2.
It's his wife.
I'll be curious about that.
His wife's dead.
Yeah. No. Oh, no. Well, she's not. No. I don't want that.
Because, like, she was very clearly not dead in this movie, and now I'm like, wait, did she
I don't know
die?
Why suddenly I agreed, like, oh, yeah, she was dead. But I was like, no, wait, she wasn't here. She didn't die.
Yeah,
and I'm
talking about that's what's going to happen at the end of Dead
Reckoning. Right, yeah, and then it occurred to me that, yeah, you're trying to foreshadow something, and I don't want you to will that into existence. So that's why I said, no,
already,
that's not going to happen.
It's already filmed, so she's already dead.
Don't you bring that curse on me, Ricky Bobby. Andy, describe to us the villain's plan.
The villain's plan.
Wait, who's the villain? I think you gotta establish who the villain is.
I mean, I'd put money on Solomon Lane. I think Henry Cavill's sort of the accomplice.
By proxy, I feel like the villain in this is Henry Cavill, but he is trying to execute the plan that Solomon Kane had given him. So
right, so that's why I'd say Solomon Lane's the mastermind of the whole thing.
Wait, isn't the whole thing that right. Henry Cavill's character hired them to get him the plutonium? Like he hired the apostles to acquire the plutonium.
No, Henry Cavill is an apostle. The apostles work for Lane.
I thought they said John Lark, like, was getting them to get him the plutonium, like, at the very beginning.
John Lark was an
apostle. Yeah, but I thought they also said John Lark was the guy trying to get the plutonium through the apostles. I know you're saying he is one, but I feel like that was the whole thing, is, like, he was trying to buy it from them, the apostles.
I see what you're saying. I took it at, not to say that you're wrong, because I guess I don't know, but I think I took it as that was just another step, like another layer of misdirection.
I mean, that's certainly possible. I don't think it was clear.
Well, and not misdirection for the viewer, but misdirection for like the IMF and the government.
Yeah. Well, I think what the apostles had the plutonium, right? Because they're the ones that stole it from Ethan at the beginning.
Maybe.
And then they are trying to somehow, for some reason, get Solomon Lane out of, like, they're bargaining Solomon Lane for the plutonium. Right?
But at the same time, like, the plutonium was supposed to be used, because that's why that whole Wolf Blitzer thing happened.
Right, so I don't know.
That's why I don't feel like the plan wasn't to steal the plutonium to make Tom Cruise break him out of prison?
Because Tom Cruise's John, quote-unquote John Lark was breaking Solomon Lane out, and for his payment, he was getting the plutonium. So, if the apostles already had the plutonium, and John Lark is an apostle, he's doing business with himself. To Ian's point, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, because, no, like, why? Remember, they're showing up to buy it off that lady. Like, she thinks that Tom Cruise is John Lark when he's pretending to be John Lark. Remember,
right?
But the only the only way that they can get both, the plutonium and free Lane, is for Walker
to fake buy it.
Yeah, is for Walker as using the alias to other people of this persona of John Lark to use his position to manipulate different parties to make decisions to get him what he wants. And what he wants is the free Lane and end up with the plutonium.
That's why he uses the proxy. Okay.
Yeah, okay. he can't get Lane himself. The apostles can't get Lane, you know, get Lane themselves. So that persona he uses to his advantage to manipulate the other parties to creating an arrangement that would allow him to get both.
Okay, so
I'll buy it.
The plot on Wikipedia just says that he's John Lark and he's buying it. He's not related to the apostles. Sorry.
Maybe.
I mean, we have it right? He is an apostle, right? They say that right at the beginning.
He's not.
No, they said it in the beginning. He is an apostle.
No.
It was part of the mission breakdown from...
They literally had a screen, and I showed you guys after the movie. There's a screen that says, these are the apostles, and fucking Henry Cavill's in the picture.
No, there's a guy with a blurred face.
It's him! It's the same guy!
One of the apostles was named, you know, Larkin, and...
Yeah, I'm putting money on John Lark is an apostle.
Well, regardless, Lane recruited him or approached him after realizing that they had they shared similar sentiments based on the manifesto that Walker wrote under the guise of John Lark. So, regardless of whether he's technically an apostle, he's working for Lane. I still don't see them as equal partners. He recognizes that Lane has the leverage, the resources, the connection. He has the infrastructure and the network. So whether he technically considers himself in the group called the Apostles or not, he's still like his, you know, he's a layer under him on the org chart.
Well, the apostles were all, like, the best parts of the syndicate, right? The ones that, like, survived, like, all of the exposure and execution.
Some sort of, like, splinter group of the syndicate or something, yeah.
Right, so the syndicate was created and managed by Solomon Lane.
Yes.
So, by proxy, the apostles were his crew.
Agreed. I also don't think that necessarily if the point of contention is Walker slash John Lark technically an apostle under Lane, or something like Island Unto Himself under Lane, I don't think it makes a difference.
Yeah, I guess I could see that.
He's ex-syndicate either way, whether he's an impossible or not.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Or current syndicate, I guess.
So we sort of hammered out Henry Cavill's character's plan. Solomon Lane, does he have a different plan?
Yes.
So what's his plan? What do we need to dissect for him?
He wants Tom to, right before he dies, see him get cucked.
That's not necessarily wrong.
Yeah, I can't dispute that.
That's what I read into it. Oh, hey, Tom, get cucked and then die.
Go boom.
Andy, anything to add for that one? Or you want to follow that one up?
He basically wants to take... I feel like he wants to take down the system, and this by launching the two nukes in the one area, and poisoning all of that water supply for a ginormous part of what was it, East Asia or Middle Asia?
Yeah, like a third Southeast. Of the world's population or something.
Yeah, I feel like that is a pretty good stab at the. At, like, the system.
I'd add, too, I think it goes hand in hand, that he wants Ethan to suffer. So he puts Julia right there.
Oh, sure.
Well, I feel like Ethan's the only one that has ever rivaled him enough to actually, like, I wouldn't say trounce, but, you know, like, defeat him.
Yeah. Yeah. What'd you guys think of Henry Cavill in this movie? Like him as the villain? Ian, we'll go with you. What do you think of Henry Cavill and Superman in this movie?
I was watching it and I was like, you know, this guy would be great in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. I was like, this guy really gets how to play that spy role. I feel like they could have digitally removed his mustache. You know, it wasn't really working for me. I might have made that choice if I was, you know, maybe an esteemed auteur director to digitally remove his mustache. But, you know, I thought he was great. I think my one only issue of Henry Cavill in this role is he's too handsome. He stands out way too much. Like, he's like probably a good 6'2", 6'3", I would bet. If I saw him walking around, I'd be like, that's a handsome man. Like, he doesn't blend in, you know? Like, that's the issue of him being like a spy. He doesn't blend in.
He's too handsome. He's a spy. He's too handsome. He's a spy.
That's how he blends in. You'd never assume he is.
You're like, that's a fucking handsome man. And I did like the really seal it though. Like, they did that trope because, you know, only ugly people are evil. Like, evil people are always ugly. So that's why they sprayed him with the hot, like, oil at the end to scar him and make him ugly. That way, you know, everyone would know, oh, he really is the bad guy. Because, you know, we weren't sure until then.
Yeah. But also, the last 10 minutes of the movie.
Well, also, we had to prove that that wasn't a mask he was wearing. Though I wouldn't have minded if we would have found out he was actually a Terminator. That would have been kind of
cool. I will take that crossover.
I could watch that.
Andy, what'd you think of Cavill in this one?
I thought he did a pretty good job in this. My only, I think, hang up on him was the whole, like, I'm a boxer now, like, coming at you sort of stance.
The arm reload.
Yeah, where he was like...
Yeah, I fucking love it.
That was the Terminator. That was the giveaway.
I didn't. I was like, that's a little bit more cheese than I needed right there.
Andy, well, I love that, like... Real quick. I think it was in the... Andy's that was the part that was in the trailer, wasn't it? The arm reload? That I thought they queued that up in the trailer to like, the music of the trailer. Which, when you see it in the movie, it's in silence, so it doesn't have as much, like, oomph to it. But I still think it's awesome. I don't know.
And Andy's interpretation of that, though, I like way more, because how he just did that reminded me of, like, Joe Dirt getting ready to fight.
Josh, what did you think of Cavill in this one?
Yeah, it worked. It worked fine. I think, especially after trying to do, you know, a couple Superman gigs, you know, try something on the flip side, and, you know, because he also doesn't have to be like the, you know, we always say, like, mustache twirling type of, yeah, you see, now I'm gonna get you, and you're, yeah. But he still gets to be like, oh, you're completely co-signing the murder of like 2.5 billion people. Cool. I will say my only gripe with it was, and it's a fine line to walk. It's thin ice to walk when you have, when you're revealing that a character is a double agent. I just thought in the moment that they did it was just like out of nowhere. Like, I remember the first time watching it, it took me like almost the whole scene of like him untying Lane, realizing what they're talking about, like to understand what it was actually saying. There's not as much of a natural flow of like that exchange, that conversation. He just like walks in, starts untying him, like, all right, we got to get you out of here. Wait, why?
So there are two other breadcrumbs in the movie where he is the bad guy. Did you catch them on the repeat viewings, Josh?
I think I caught one. And one is when they go to the party thing and Tom Cruise is describing Solomon Lane to the widow. Is that her name, the widow?
I think.
The blonde chick?
If I remember. Well,
you throw white
widow or something.
White widow.
Because she's white?
As that's what I took. As he is saying the words, like disenfranchised, whatever word he uses, disenfranchised, or disillusioned, special agents, whatever phrase he uses there, the couple of seconds that he is saying that phrase, the camera directly is just on Henry Cavill. It moves away from the conversation and it's just on him as he's like, oh, I'm the other guy here and I'm just casually observing this conversation. They tell you exactly who he is in the moments that he's there.
I wasn't thinking of that exact moment, but I think there are, you're right. I think there are definite other moments just like that too, where the dialogue pans to Henry Cavill when they're talking about double agents or the bad guy or the villain or something like that. But there are like two hard evidence things in this movie. One of them I already mentioned, which is when you're getting the mission briefing in the beginning of the movie, when Ian's watching the film from the book that's projected on the wall, they list a picture of apostles. Now, like Ian said, they have black bars over their eyes. If you pause it and look in the top left corner is fucking Henry Cavill. He's in the picture of the apostles. The movie told you flat out from the beginning, he's a bad guy.
Hmm.
And there's a second instance somewhere in the middle of the movie that I know Andy caught.
Yep.
That you want to describe to Josh what you caught?
Yeah, what did I miss?
So when they kick the shit out of the Asian guy that's supposed to be John Lark, right? And he ends up getting she busts a cap in his ass. you know, Tom Cruise finds his cell phone and it's busted as shit.
Yes.
Puts it right back on him. But then Henry Cavill hands the FBI lady, CIA? FBI?
CIA.
Which one was she? CIA? He hands her a completely working and unbroken cell phone. And I immediately was like, wait a second. And I like looked over at Brian and he was like, no, don't say nothing. Don't. And he was like, he's like freaking out over there. But
granted, yes, we did catch that again. And I think, yeah, something like that is very on the nose and at least gives you suspicion of like, okay, there's something else about him. But I don't know that it necessarily points to, oh, he is John Lark or he is working for the people. Like, between him and Angela Bassett, they have a whole buildup in the first third of the movie about kind of wanting to discredit the IMF and make sure that, you know, Ethan Hunt doesn't get the credit for things. So I took it as, at that point in the movie, I took that as he's being, you know, he's doing something his boss wouldn't like him to do, but it's his way of trying to further their discrediting campaign.
In repeat viewings, I feel like the whole speech he gives Angela Bassett when he hands her the phone, he's describing himself.
In retrospect,
disillusioned agent that figured out his country doesn't care about him and he's just had enough and he does his own thing.
Yes, entirely. That's exactly what he's doing. So, but you don't know that yet.
Right. And I think I've heard from McQuarrie and other interviews and stuff, like, they, when they wrote the movie and filmed the scene of, like, him handing the phone, they figured, oh shit, we're giving it away to the audience. They're going to figure this out. And then on all the test screenings, no one cared.
Yeah.
And then when it came time to their mask reveal, and when he talks to Solomon Lane, then everyone's like, what? What just happened? And he's like, well, I thought we told you that 20 minutes or, you know, an hour ago. So, and I, first viewing, I missed that whole thing too. I didn't put two and two together that the phone was busted and then it wasn't and stuff like that. So I dig shit like that. I don't know. It worked for me.
Yeah. It all works otherwise. Like I said, it just in the moment where they're in the cell and he start, it was just how it was set up and how it was executed, though. Like the first 60 seconds of it just felt so I want to say unnatural, but I know that's not right. I don't know. It felt fumbling. I think there was a better way to execute a reveal like that, even through just dialogue and action.
Right.
That just felt awkward to me. That's all.
Okay. Ian, I know in the pre-movie, I think you had a prediction that was pretty damn close to what we get in the movie, which was, hey, I want to see his wife come back and have her be held hostage and have some kind of plot like that, which... You're pretty damn close. Like, Solomon Lane comes back, pretty much holds her hostage for the end of the movie. So, are you happy with that? Did you like that she came back? I mean, you kept saying over the last couple movies that you wanted to see something happen with her. You thought they'd do something. You thought she'd die. You thought something. So, were you satisfied with sort of how they tied this up?
I mean, they didn't tie it up because she's going to die in the next one. But,
she's not.
I think if you're going to do this interconnected thing, you eventually had to reintroduce his wife because... Like, Tom cares way too much about her that he, like, killed 8 Chechen dudes to, like, cover up the fact that she's not dead. And so you had to do something. So to then, I thought she was a little dumb to not suspect that this guy that's just like, here's a bunch of money to build a medical camp in the middle of fucking nowhere. You know, that guy randomly called out of nowhere. You know, maybe there's a little suspicious when you're, like, some undercover cucking agent. But,
But he did also unleash an outbreak of
smallpox
there.
Yeah, she doesn't know it's the same person that hired her to clean up the mess that he made.
Right.
Probably should have, though.
Yeah, it's still smallpox. Yeah. It still needs to be dealt with.
Let other people that aren't fake married you. To super spies.
No, do she's too first responder. She's going to be like, I'm healing the world right now. Fucker.
So yeah,
not to mention, I don't know how much time has passed. Like if it's been years, I could see her like not thinking that's an issue anymore. I don't know.
She makes it seem like she thinks about Tom Cruise every night as she goes to sleep, saving the world. So I don't know if she'd stop thinking about it, but I mean, they were going to bring it back at some point. It was nice to where she wasn't really a hostage. It was like an implied threat when, John Locke, Henry Cavill, shows him the photo of, like, get away or I kill this lady. And then Ethan, Tom Cruise is like, I'm just going to climb this elevator quicker now because you should be my wife. And that's what he tries to do is climb the elevator quicker. That didn't work out, though. But, yeah, so I enjoyed them having her back. Like I said, she wasn't really a hostage. She was just also going to die near Tom Cruise. That was, I guess, the plan was... Tom, you lose and your wife dies here. You know your wife's dead when you die because she's here.
Yep.
But you left to go on a helicopter, so I guess you'll live and she'll die. But, you know.
Didn't know that at the time.
No, he didn't. I guess that wasn't part of the... Well, maybe the plan shouldn't have involved having 2 helicopters. Have 1 helicopter. And then Tom Cruise can't climb the other one. Or why does it even have a fucking thing underneath it that he can climb?
They
other than to use as a weapon on the other helicopter.
Supplies, man, supplies.
Yeah.
It looked like it's just a bunch of rocks. Like
it was the payload.
Yeah.
it was clearly marked.
There's a button in there.
On the button on the control as the payload.
Do you think he
wrote had
that
a payload,
himself?
Ian?
Because I'm convinced that button's not on that helicopter.
Andy, what'd you think of how they brought Julia back?
I enjoyed it. I feel like his, 2 or 3 dreams of her and Solomon Lane together?
Yeah.
Kept making you think, okay, she's going to actually show up in this movie. And when I was hoping that it was going to happen exactly like it did, like when they went to that village or whatever, that like medical encampment. I'm like, oh yeah, she's definitely going to be there. And then when he like turns around and his entire crew is like, oh shit. I was like, yeah, that's Solomon Lane for you.
I even love the way they like talk in code. She's like, oh, he's on vacation. He's like, no, I'm working. I got stuff to do.
Well, she says it. It's for me, it's not until he responds that I pick up on the, like, obviously the code that they're using, but the desperation. She wants him to be on vacation.
Oh, yeah.
She doesn't want him to be working. That is her desire, because if he's working, she's fucked.
Yeah.
Or there's a good chance that she's fucked.
Yes. Or soon to be. Yes.
Well, that's why she has a husband.
Bada bing.
Appreciate that, Ian.
Josh, what did you think of having Julia back?
Yeah, it was a nice surprise. I mean, by that point in the movie, so much has happened, and you're so deep. Like, you realize, like, okay, this is going to be the culmination. Whatever's going to finish is going to play out here. So I'm like, I'm so focused on that, that even if something had occurred to me prior to that, like, oh, hey, where's Julia been? Are they going to incorporate her in some way? You know, she's out of my mind. I'm focusing on, they're like, they've built the tension of like, we're against the clock. We need to find these things ASAP. Yeah, it didn't even occur to me. So as soon as she turns around, you're like, hey, the lady, that's great. I like in the moments when she comes upon Ving Rhames trying to dismantle the bomb, and the exchange between the two of them and the understanding of it, you know, Ving saying, I can use your help. You have no hope of getting out of here. If these go off.
Well, he's doing is the hope. So she might as well be there.
Exactly. And you know, the other two, like, you know, Benji and Elsa are protesting. And he says to her, like, where is she going to go? And even she's like, okay, well, 20 minutes ago, this was not happening, but now it's happening. What can I do? If I'm here, is there anything I can do? I like how that played out. And then when it got to the point where he realized, we've done everything we can to this point, it's up to others now. Go be with your husband. You might not know you only have 4 minutes left. Because I forget if he, like, you know, at that point, you don't think you know if she understands how much time is left or not. But, and then with the implications of it all, but for him to just, you go spend the last 3 minutes of your life with that person.
Yeah.
I liked how that was used.
Everything about that was great. Like, I know I've mentioned it before, we got to Ghost Protocol and you see the glimpse of Julia knowing that she didn't actually die, she's still around. I liked even that little bit. So even just having her back in this one, I think it was a nice bookend to, okay, that maybe that chapter for Ethan's life is now over. At least I don't expect to see her back after this. I think this was a nice little bow for that. And at least for me, I'm hoping, you know, against Ian's wishes, that she doesn't die in the next one and that she can just live happily ever after this. And I'm fine with that. So maybe it's just wishful thinking, but that's where my mind's going to go.
It's in the title. Dead Reckoning.
We just spent how many minutes talking about things that they presented directly to us that we didn't pick up on? He's telling you what's coming.
I'm watching with my eyes closed half the time. another repeatable question. What do you think of, or I guess we'll see if you have a favorite after all the ones we've seen. And out of the IMF handlers that we've had, which we had Kittredge, Anthony Hopkins, Lawrence Fishburne, IMF secretary, who was Tom Wilkinson. We technically didn't have one for most of Rogue Nation, but Alec Baldwin returns in this one as the IMF director. So out of those five guys, which I guess we haven't had a woman yet, but out of those five guys, do you have a favorite IMF handler, Josh?
I think it's a tie between Lawrence Fishburne and Alec Baldwin. Even though he's in a different capacity for all of Rogue Nation, between that and this, he gets the most amount of direct time interacting and having, I guess just interacting in different ways with the team itself.
So you just got to know that character a bit more. Lawrence Fishburne in part four is just really fun, though.
Three. He was in three.
Is he three? He's three. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Ian, do you have a favorite IMF handler?
Lawrence Fishburne's a great actor. He's my favorite. I guess IMF handler. He's the best at, I think, the role. Alec Baldwin just kind of plays Alec Baldwin in a power role. You know, real happy no one died on set under his watch this time, so that was good.
There's a moment. There's a moment where I think he forget if he either fires or threatens someone with a gun or points. Yeah. And I said to Sarah, like,
that didn't age well.
imagery like that is not, yeah.
No, because his gun's not loaded.
Mm.
It's in the movie. that's when I made my first Alec Baldwin killing someone joke of the night. When he had a non-loaded gun. I was like, oh, they should have done that on that other movie.
Andy, what'd you think? IMF handler. Favorite anywhere?
I think Alec Baldwin is my favorite. And I think that's mostly because he gets the most to do out of all the handlers.
Yeah.
I feel like Lawrence Fishburne was very good, but he was really not in the movie that much.
Yeah.
You know, Alec Baldwin sort of spans two whole movies and you get to see his whole arc and how he becomes a secretary and stuff.
Yeah. Baldwin gets the most to do. Lawrence Fishburne had the best lines.
Yes.
Agreed.
Favorite action sequence in this movie? Andy, I'll swing back to you. What was your favorite action sequence in this one?
My favorite action sequence to this was Solomon Lane versus, God, what was her name?
Ilsa
and Simon Pegg.
Okay. In the cabin. Right
in the cabin. I just thought that had like an intensity to it and a finality to it where you're like, oh God, he's not going to be able to like balance on that bucket.
Did you think Benji was going to go?
I didn't know, you know?
Yeah.
Even when she cut him down, it was like, fuck.
Plus there's that moment in that sequence where she's tied to the chair and backs it up into a table and it looks like she just like breaks her back. Getting out of the chair, where every time I cringe at that. That just looks like it sucks. Ian, favorite action sequence for you? You trying to remember?
It's tough because this one had definitely some good ones. I guess I really enjoyed the fallout of the plane. When they fell.
When he gets struck by lightning and stuff. Yeah.
Some people jump, and Tom Cruise has to give Henry Cavill his air, and they're wearing like, this sci-fi, like, they're wearing the Apple Pro reality glasses as they fall out. And I really enjoyed that. It had, like, some fun, you know, Tom might have died because he jumped out of this plane 8 times in real life thing going on. Plus the whole, like, you know, Henry Cavill being like, oh, you lost your air tank. Like, real arrogant. Like, I really, even though, like, he should clearly, like, remember not remembering the last 6 minutes.
Right, blacking out for 5 minutes on the way down, yeah.
You'd think he would notice that, but no. And, you know, the fact that, like, you know, the whole mission probably should have been fucked right then. They probably both should have died on the way down, and that's
the mission over. Credits. That's it. Josh, you got a favorite action sequence?
I think one of the things that solidified this as my number two the year that I saw it was ending the movie with that almost never ending, but not in a bad way, just the helicopter chase and dogfight and then mountain cliff fight. From where that picks up and just continues all like you think it's over 4 times and then it just keeps going. And I said, like, not in a bad way per se. It feels like it rolls, but I think I will always be partial to that.
And there was more to that sequence because in the trailer, when he's in the helicopter, he somehow goes, I think when he flies up through the clouds and goes down, he ends up in an area where there's like a road and he's flying a helicopter towards a truck and the truck spins out. That was how the trailer ended. They cut that sequence from the helicopter chase. Mm. So it was even longer in an earlier cut of the movie. It's fun to me, and maybe this is just a sign of a good action movie, that all four of us have picked a different favorite action sequence. The bathroom fight for me is my favorite. It's one of my favorites in the entire series. I just love the way that whole thing's staged and choreographed. The blunt nature of Henry Cavill's character through that whole fight of just like, I'm not going to use any of these gadgets. I'm going to hit him with the laptop.
Yeah.
Or just the way he punches. They describe him as a hammer. He fights that way. And I really like how that whole sequence plays out. I think that's awesome. All right. We'll go through the stuff that we tallied. And then we'll go through anything else we want to talk about at the end. So one thing, again, we asked for before the previewing, when we talk about the movie before we see it, how many mask gags do we think there will be? Ian said 2. Andy said 3. I said 2. Josh said 1. My tally had 2. I think we had 2 mask gags in this one.
Dos.
Next one. Does Ethan go rogue? Ian said yes. Andy said yes. I said yes. Josh said no. I think the ruling was yes. I think we're going with yes on this one. And he was pretty good up until what, I think when they were in the catacombs is where he finally just goes rogue, or was it before that? I'm trying to remember.
I think there's no question that he is rogue at that point.
Yeah.
There's debates earlier, but right then, yeah.
Yeah, from the moment that from the moment that Alec Baldwin is killed.
Okay.
Like,
yeah, because we had talked about, like, up through that, he's, like, playing John Lark, who, it's not rogue, because he's playing the persona that is part of the mission, so we were considering that on mission. And, yeah, somewhere in that last third of the movie, I think, is when he finally goes rogue. It's so, yes, I think.
The CIA was there to arrest him, and then
yes, he didn't okay. let that yes. happen. Yes, that's a rogue. Check.
Like, I think you could argue the whole, like, when they were breaking Lane out of, like, you could argue, I think, that he's rogue at that point.
Right.
Because he's now, like, committing, like, felonies and maybe shooting police officers. But, you know, he solidifies later on.
Yeah, I'd still classify that as, I think you could argue both ways, but I'd still classify that as being on mission undercover. But yeah, when he runs away from the CIA who's trying to arrest him, that is rogue.
Which isn't the first time that's happened to him, huh?
It's true. Was there a helicopter used in a mission-related scenario? Ian said yes. Andy said no. I said yes. Josh said, and I quote again, helicopter, hella yes. So,
because I remember.
Andy, you're the odd one out on that one. So,
oh, yeah, definitely. Whole lot, and I might I add that the last helicopter chase scene that we got was fucking terrible. around the windmills, remember?
Yes.
And it was like slow and sluggy and awful. This one was very intense and awesome.
Yes.
So.
Does Tom Cruise ride a motorcycle? Everyone said yes, and we were all correct. Which I actually forgot. I think I forgot he had a motorcycle on this one.
I'm just assuming now.
Yeah.
When did he get his motorcycle license?
I have no idea.
I think that we could see like a through line of his movies of him riding motorcycles.
Oh.
Well, in that case, like 1987.
Yeah, like Top Gun. Right?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if he had his license then.
I don't know if he's on a motorcycle in The Outsiders. I'd have to go back and watch.
Did any of them drive in that movie? Because I feel like they were all poor.
That's true, too.
What else do we have? How many times does Tom Cruise run in this movie? Ian said 12. Andy said 17. I said 25. Josh said 19. For my tally, I counted 17.
Oh, shit. I'm way under you.
I also counted 17.
So if Andy and I are correct, Andy's right on the money. It's 17.
Yeah.
I really wasn't paying attention then.
Did you have 3?
There were some runs where I'm like, okay, he did technically run there. It was only like 4 steps, but it was a run.
And I was very into the beginning of the movie watching this with Andy, and I could see him out of my peripherals. He would be watching, and then like the scene would happen we'd move on to the next scene, and then like 2 minutes later, he'd be like looking up at the sky, like, "Was it? Oh yeah." And then I'd see him make a note. And I'm like, "Oh shit, that was a run." And then I'd have to make a tally too.
Some of them were like sneaky, like when they're with Ving Rhames after the shootout, and they're like, "Wait, where's the plutonium?" And like they run.
He takes like a 5-step run to where the plutonium
was.
Yeah,
and I was like, and then after that scene ended, and I was like all happy hunky dory, and then I was like, "Wait a minute, Halloring runs." Pretty sure that was a run. I like marked it down, and I see Brian go, "Oh yeah."
for the first half of this movie, there is very light running.
Yes.
Yeah,
like
no
they
running.
Save it for too. The back half. And then, you know, everyone's favorite fucking question, does he taste the goods? I tallied the yes, because he gets a kiss from the White Widow, so
yeah, I mean
we're classifying that.
Literally,
think, right?
Tasted the goods.
Who's goods? Who's goods?
The goods, Andy. The
yeah,
goods.
It's just the yeah.
Any goods?
The ethereal goods.
Does it matter? Any goods? Yeah. Doesn't matter? Okay. Then yes, he did taste the goods.
Were you unsure until that moment? Like I thought
well,
you were.
Well, no, I just like his coat, like his
like if he made out with his own hand to practice his kissing, we wouldn't count it, obviously.
I was more thinking like either his wife or the MI6 lady, who I can never remember her name.
Ilsa.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, her, yeah. Yeah, I'm curious to see where they get, because, you know, they tied off their relationship with Julia, I feel like, in this movie. They seem to be leaning towards Ethan and Ilsa getting together. So I don't know if they're going to lean heavily more into that in the next one. I guess we'll have to see. He might be tasting the goods all over that movie. We'll have to see.
Yeah, I was going to say, I saw some bow chicken wow wow in her eyes when she looked at him that last time, so.
Hey, Haley Atwell is in Dead Reckoning. I'm hoping somebody does. Because it ain't me, so it should be somebody.
All right, anything less, final thoughts or anything you guys want to add for Mission Impossible Fallout before we get to our rating?
Oh,
final thoughts.
I think the villain's plan was dumb. I feel right. Like they don't comprehend what humanity is if they think we're gonna overthrow Western civilization and like throw over these governments and start a revolution by polluting the water of Southeast Asia. I'm just, you know, personally, I don't see it. And it's also like the whole thing is you got to go big, because big things means like big changes. And as we learned in the pandemic, that is not true. As we know, we had a president that said the cure can't be worse than the sickness. And that was just like having people not like kiss each other as they're going to work and hugging it all the time. We couldn't do that. And then on top of that, do you know how long there were between world wars? Like, we don't last that long without doing some shit. Like, overthrowing all of civilization because they blew up some water in some third hole hellhole I can't pronounce? Who gives a shit? America jets! We would have bombed them all back to Kingdom Come! Fuck them! Like, and it's the same thing. Like, if the other plan was to bomb these holy sites, that's worked out really well, bombing in the Middle East. That's always accomplished a lot. I just really don't think... I think they're just like, this is a bad thing that's happening without comprehending. Would that actually solve Lane's problems? Would Lane be happy? When I think we're finding out, Lane's just mad. What he really just wants is someone else to be as upset as him. And right now, that muse for his anger is Tom Cruise.
I can tell you're still mad that they give Solomon Lane a beard in this movie. You're still turked about that one.
He was such a perfect villain in the last one. You were like, that German dude eats fucking faces. Now he just looks like some homeless guy. You're like, that guy's like dumb. That's the wonder he's coming up with such a dumb plan. The smallpox thing was better, but that was just a ruse to get Tom Cruise's wife to the nuclear annihilation ground zero. Because the plan was just to hurt Tom Cruise. That was, this whole movie isn't about overthrowing Western civilizations anymore, like John Lark wants to. It's about Lane trying to taste Tom's goods.
Anybody else have any other final? Someone else say something besides don't let Ian end on this movie.
aside from like the last eight words, I actually think there was some really good insight there. Because I think one of the things that made him so interesting in Rogue Nation was the things that they described that he did as the villain, right? He wasn't the mass destruction big event, person. He didn't even have the bomb. The other nuclear bomb was in Ghost Protocol.
Yeah.
So the things he did, like, and they reiterate some of these in this one, when Cavill and Cruz are sitting in the truck before the heist thing to try to free Lane is happening, and he's questioning Cruz about, oh, did Lane really do this? Did Lane really do that? And it's a lot of stuff that they mentioned in Rogue Nation. He brought that, he blew up a passenger plane of hundreds of people to get at one person. The litany of things that Hunt goes through to his team in Rogue Nation, talking about the destabilization of industries and regions. That is the way that you do what Lane wants to do. He bought into Lark's idea of not only the greater, the greater the suffering, the greater the peace, but he took, I want to say, like, the lazy route, but he wanted to hurt the most amount of people in the fastest way possible. And so that's how they got to the plan that they did, and that wasn't the way to do it. He probably would have been more successful to continue with the stuff he was doing, because then people don't even notice what is falling out from under them until, think about how much people have been affected in the way that they talk about the American inflation in the real world in the last year and a half to 2 years. The way that people feel that legitimately disrupts their lives, even that little bit, once it's in place, it's hard to correct.
Yeah.
Lane's plans and his actions for a few years or months, however long he was in operation before, Hunt was on to him, those things would have worked way better in the long term. Once you change circumstances slowly in ways that people don't understand they're happening, and in ways that they don't have any influence over or ability to affect whatsoever, only then can you change the paradigm. You don't need to bring down governments. You just need to make people's lives shitty.
Yeah.
And it would have achieved really what he wanted.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how convoluted or stuff the villain plot ends up being with Dead Reckoning 1 and 2.
Well, that's why I think they're going to move on to it being just purely personal for Tom. People just attacking him because he's too good of a soldier and person and spy. he's such a great icon, that's why you got to get him. He's just such
quoting
a,
some of the he's more, special features again.
No, it's more of an idea than a person, Like John Galt, if you ever read Atlas Shrugged.
I did not.
I've not.
No one has. It's 900 pages of nothing.
All right, ratings. Oh, sorry, go ahead. Nope. Andy, go ahead. Go ahead. I thought he was just gonna keep going. I was trying to just move us along.
my last thought was I feel like everything that happened in this movie was planned from the get. I feel like there was a not a plan B, but if Solomon Lane had ever been caught, put this plan into motion. And as soon as he was caught, they put this plan into motion.
Okay.
I feel like that was, there's a term for it and I can't come up with it right now, but,
this like a failsafe plan.
Yeah. Like a failsafe plan.
Dead man switch.
So I feel like and some of this stuff needed time to like sort of fester to be able to, come back around and start affecting things. And
yeah.
I think the amount of time from when he was caught to when this happened, it was just about the right amount of time. So I feel like all of this was planned from the get. If this happens to me, open this envelope and carry out what it right. says.
I gotcha. All right, rating. Out of 10. What do we want to give it? Josh, I'll start with you, having seen this more than the other two. Out of 10, what do you want to give this one?
Since you know the first thing one of us is going to say, can you just give us the prior scores?
All right, Josh, you're on Mission Impossible 3, and you're on Rogue Nation. So yeah. You gave 3 a 7.5, Rogue Nation 8.5.
All right, I'm going to give this an 8.2.
Oh, under Rogue Nation. That yes. surprises me. Ian, what do you want to rate this one?
7.2.
Kind of odd, but still your highest rated out of all the other movies you've seen.
I know.
Andy, out of 10, what do you want to give this one?
What did I give the last one?
Rogue Nation, you gave a 9.
Ooh, shit.
I cut all my scores in half.
9.2.
What is this? What 0.2 is all of a sudden? What the fuck is happening?
I had that before Josh spoke.
I need to like say I need to save room for the other two movies if they.
That's why getting
go
up
past this,
getting up into that 9 territory is dangerous. That's why I rarely yeah. bridge above an 8, 8.5. It's hard to maneuver with that little narrow room up there.
That's why on Rewind Theater we go to 11.
Do we? No, we don't.
I think we did once.
I don't know.
I'm gonna look it up maybe. While you tell everyone.
Oh, that's right. You have the scores for that one. That's right. All right. Out of 10, I'm gonna give this one 9.25. I'm gonna give it the whole quarter point.
I got so pissed when someone did that in my theater because I had to make the decimals bigger.
To be fair though, that almost makes more sense going like on quarter points as opposed to
right.
fifth points like we all just did.
Yeah. I really kinda wanna give it a 9.5, like that's where I was leaning, but to everybody else's point, if we have two more of these to go, I don't know if I want to go so far as giving any one of these a 10 right now, but I mean, this one is up there for me. I think I still have a very soft spot. I can't say what? Soft spot. There we go. Soft spot in my heart for Mission Impossible 3. I still think 3 is excellent. Rogue Nation is still, I think, my second favorite. Or, you know, up there as one of my favorites as well. This one is definitely in my top three. Those three are pretty much interchangeable for me at any point when I'm watching these. And I think maybe just watching this one more recently and really enjoying it, I am rating this just slightly higher than the other two. So for right now, this is my bar.
I rated this 0.1 lower than Venom.
Oh, fuck you. Fuck you so hard. That's so stupid. No way are they comparable. No way. Oh,
you gave Venom a 7.3. And I'm sorry, you opened this episode, or at least my part of it, by criticizing Bradley for rating Ready Player One so high, and you gave Venom a 7.3, sir?
I gave Swamp Thing a 7.7. Remember Swamp Thing? Steel, 7.2, same score.
Ian is the anti-IMF.
Let's chalk those up to like that was like 8 months into the pandemic when we started doing Rewind Theater, and Venom and Swamp Thing were in like the first 5 that we did. So I'm going to say his brain was a little addled at the time.
He's just like, something to talk about. Yay!
Yeah, I've always been very clear that my scores reflect the movie and its place. It's not a comparison between movies. I only bring up my scores to aggravate Brian, though.
Yeah, it works. Fucking asshole. All right, we've finished Mission Impossible Fallout. We have done all 6 currently available Mission Impossible movies. Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 comes out July 12th. We will be going to see that. We'll have to see when our schedules align and when we're all going to get a chance to see it. I'd actually like to do that one if we can, probably with everybody. We'll see if we can get everybody on for that one and bring the whole group to see the new one, and at least review it, try together. I don't know if we're going to do... I don't know if we'll treat that as a never seen that. We might just try to do it as just a regular full-on movie review for just like we do with a new movie. I think that might be the better way to handle that one since it's new to all of us. Because I don't know if we really want to go through like the previewing stuff for that and just I don't know. I think I always saw the Never Seen That as movies that have been out and established and stuff that you're presenting to someone that hasn't seen something that's been out for a while. Brand new movies, I think, are on a different level, and we probably treat that as a brand new review, which, honestly, I think there's probably some other movies we should be doing that with recently, too, because I know Spider-Verse is out. We haven't talked about that yet. Flash is this weekend. Indy is in 2 weeks. Something else comes out. What?
Indy 500 movie?
No. Indiana Jones. Come on.
Never heard of him.
Something is next month, too. What am I thinking of that's next month?
Barbie, shit. Oppenheimer.
No, there's something. I can't think about it. There's something else, I think, in July, and I can't think about what it is right now that's probably big. I was going to try to look at my phone. I don't know how quickly I'm going to be able to see it.
Nothing I see on my calendar. I'm not sure.
Oh, July is, yeah, July 12th is Mission Impossible. That's the other one. I literally just said it. So there's, yeah, probably at least four movies that we probably should get to and try to review. So I don't know when we'll get to them, how soon, how quickly. I don't know when everybody else has seen them. So, yeah, we'll see what we get to over the next. We could probably do the next, like, four or five episodes is all movie reviews if we wanted to. So I'll have to see. Based on schedules, who's seen what, and see if we can figure out when to schedule something and see what we get to, as long as nothing else comes up. But yeah, that's kind of my spitball answer to what might be coming next. We'll try to keep you posted. But that's it. If you've enjoyed the show, please support us. Leave a 5-star rating and review. Be sure to give us a share on social media. You can follow or subscribe to the show. We're on Spotify, iTunes, Google, Anchor, Stitcher, Amazon. Hopefully anywhere you're listening to podcasts, you can find us. You can check us out on Facebook. Search Bry Guy and Super Friends or go to facebook.com/BryGuySuperFriends. You can send us questions, comments, topic suggestions, any of that stuff there. Try to email me, bryguysuperfriends@gmail.com. I will not check it. Hit us up on Twitter @BGSuperFriends. That I can see, that I'll respond to. If we ever do another live recording of a show, we will do it on Twitch. That is my Twitch handle, is Jedi Bry Guy, Jedi with an I, Bry with a Y. I'll keep you posted if we ever decide to do another live show. We're getting close to 300. I don't know if we're going to do a live one for that. I haven't really given, honestly, too much thought of if we're going to do anything special or just do a show for that one. So if plans change and we do something live, I will start posting about that and see what we figure out. If you're listening this far into the show and you have any suggestions of what you want to see for episode 300, anything that you've liked that we've done some of the milestone episodes for, any format or something that was fun to listen to or watch, let us know. Maybe we can try to figure something out and take some suggestions.
We do a table reading of the first Turtles movie.
I would do that now.
I had a feeling Josh would be down for that.
I don't know if that was supposed to be a joke because you didn't think anyone would go for it. Like I
would do that now. I mean, I'm down. If Brian comes up with zero other ideas, you know where to find us on Twitch, Turtle Talk.
Ian's handle suddenly switches from Party Bone to Turtle Talk. I love it. Because it'd be even funnier. The person that doesn't like Ninja Turtles gets the handle Turtle Talk after this. That would make it totally worth it. All right, so that's it. On behalf of Andy, Ian, Josh, and myself, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.